So Mr. Bryant is a current master's student at Brown University's new program in behavioral and social science. His previous research experience has been mostly in HIV, under the categories of mental health, genetics, neurocognition, and drug and alcohol abuse. Before entering the master's program, he was a research assistant at Florida International University's AIDS Prevention Program. While working at FIU, he gained valuable knowledge and experience in researching HIV-related risk factors among Haitians living in Miami, as well as those living in Haiti. This has inspired him to continue doing international research in these areas. Please welcome Mr. Vaughn.
Thank you. So is everybody awake? Yes? All right, good. So the title of my presentation is Alcohol Trauma and the Implications in HIV-Related Health Outcomes in a Sample of HIV-Positive Haitians. Now, the original focus of my abstract was actually specifically gender differences in PTSD symptomatology, but I thought it would be nice to give sort of a general overview of the study, sort of the study design, then sort of the natural disaster, which slightly altered the study design, and then to sort of just slightly, but and then sort of to give you a sense of the conclusions and implications. All right, so first I'd just like to acknowledge the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism for funding this research. I'd also like to acknowledge the Florida International University AIDS Prevention Program, specifically Drs. Jesse DeVue and Dr. Robert Mallow for hiring me and allowing me to look at such interesting data. And in fact, Dr. DeVue, because you know I worked so hard, she allowed me to actually go to Haiti and see my research in action, which I think is very important, particularly when doing international work. As well as Geskio, which is the hospital and refugee camp located in Haiti. They've been FIU's partners for quite a while. I have no relationships to disclose. So what's the purpose? So like I said, I'm going to sort of describe the implementation of an adapted, empirically validated behavioral intervention for HIV. So originally the design was to look at a behavioral intervention, but that intervention had to be adapted because of the obvious natural disaster. Discuss the impact, obviously, of the earthquake in Haiti, as well as some preliminary data on alcohol use and trauma symptoms in the study population, which I think you'll find quite interesting. So why study HIV in Haiti? So Haiti has one of the highest HIV prevalences around the world, and within the Caribbean, it's actually the highest rates. I believe the rates are around 2.5%, which is exorbitantly high when you compare it to a lot of other countries. So I think that's extremely important to consider. So the intervention was a cognitive behavioral stress management intervention, which had been shown to improve immune functioning, reduce dysphoric mood, and as well as enhance coping strategies. And so this study was, again, it was a collaborative effort between FIU and Geskio, which was, a hospital and partner of FIU. So what is Geskio? Geskio is the world's second oldest institution with a program dedicated to HIV/AIDS control and prevention. Dr. Jean-William Papp, excuse me if I'm mispronouncing it, is obviously a very renowned infectious disease expert. He is the founder and current director, and later I'll show you some pictures of Dr. Papp. But basically, Geskio provides services to those in need in Haiti. They don't turn people away. And they provide lots of services for HIV. And one of the innovative things is they also provide rape counseling and as well as several other important measures for the population. So here's just some pictures of Dr. Papp. As you can see, he's happy because he's with the French ambassador. And then in this picture, he looks like he doesn't want us to take a picture of him. So I'm right over there. But as well, these are some nurses from the hospital, and that's Dr. Papp hard at work. Oops. So I'll just briefly go over what's, you know, sort of the goals of CBSM, because the major focus of this is the PTSD, but it's important to take into account what the intervention was, because it later had to be adapted for this population who experienced such traumatic, you know, events. So as you can see, CBSM, it's sort of an offshoot of cognitive behavioral therapy. It teaches anxiety reduction skills, maladaptive cognitive appraisals, and sort of enhances coping skills. And so the reason CBSM was implemented, particularly within this population, is because previous evidence suggests that particularly among gay men, it reduced self-reported anxiety, anger, mood disturbance. It improved immune functioning, and as well as adherence. So this is sort of an effective intervention for improving a lot of HIV-related outcomes. So this is just sort of a brief model of the moderators and mediators for the originally intended intervention. So some of the moderators are traumatic abuse history, CBSM, neuropsychological functioning. The intervention would then improve coping, social support, which would then hopefully improve CD4, viral load, adherence, things like that. So I'll just go quickly a little bit over the sample sort of demographics. So there were 160 men and women. The age were between 18 and 60 from Geskio originally. In 2009, 809 were screened, 507 were screened in 2010. And then finally, about 198 were enrolled in the original intervention. Oops. Just some brief statistics about to get a sense of what this population looked like. So pretty low levels of education, as you can see. Most of the population, their highest level of education was elementary school. So a huge amount of unemployment, 52%. And another interesting statistic that I noted was that 50.4% of their partners had not been tested, or they didn't really know the status. So testing may have been a bit sort of iffy in this group. So the other interesting thing about this population was, as you can see, the audit is the alcohol use disorder identification test. So it's a well-standardized measure of drinking. And as you can see in this population, there's pretty heavy levels of drinking. And I'll just show you sort of how we broke it down. But so an audit level of about 8 and higher is considered a hazardous drinker. So 28.4% were considered hazardous drinkers. So they were drinking pretty heavily. And 29% of the total sample could be considered at risk. So if you think about it, sort of around 60% of the entire sample is drinking at a pretty unhealthy level, so which is important for the later findings in PTSD. So this is just a gender comparison of the audit scores. The males are in blue and the females are in pink. As you can see, sort of the females are sort of at the lower end, and then you sort of see a reversal at the higher ends of drinking. So the higher scores of audit means heavier drinking levels. So you can see that overall the men were actually heavier drinkers, but there was definitely a interesting finding with regard to the PTSD, which I'll note a little later. So then, obviously, so they had this intervention, this great design, but unfortunately, natural catastrophes do happen. Yes, that's an intervention within itself. And so, as many of you probably know, this was a very serious earthquake, 7.0 magnitude. an estimated 220,000 deaths, you know, ton of people injured. And even a year later, 1 million people, an estimated 1 million people live in tents and settlements. So even a year later, the infrastructure has really not improved all that much, which is interesting to think about when you think about sort of PTSD and drinking, you know, social groups, you know, because it's sort of like they don't actually have houses, they're living in tents, so it's a difficult situation. And obviously the damage goes beyond the measurables, which I'm here to talk about, sort of the psychological effects. So how were our participants affected specifically? So a good portion we were actually able to contact and get information about how they were affected. But as you can see, 42% had their houses severely damaged or were living in, you know, camps. 14% lost close family members. 45% of their houses were destroyed. And if you look at the number that experienced no loss, it was, you know, a little bit less than 1%. So that's pretty significant. So, again, I talked about sort of this CBSM intervention, which was designed to reduce anxiety, improve coping skills, which actually, you know, was helpful after this event. So what were some of the modifications to the study design? They changed from a health comparison condition to a waitlist control because CBSM had beneficial effects for those experiencing earthquake-related trauma. Obviously, we added the post-traumatic stress disorder questionnaire to sort of get a sense of, you know, how did this earthquake affect the psychological outcomes. Modified the incentives to fit post-earthquake needs and collected some qualitative data. So I think it's important to think about when you're measuring any sort of construct, what's your population? So the PTSD civilian checklist was used on a variety of populations, so it was standardized to different natural disasters. There was also a military checklist, which was more designed to look at military PTSD. But it's important to sort of consider, you know, what does it mean? What does trauma mean? I mean, what does it mean to be stressed out? So basically, the checklist looks at the DSM-4 criteria in 17 items in order to sort of screen and diagnose. And we used a pretty high cutoff score at 50, which, you know, in previous studies showed to be optimal sensitivity and specificity. So I'll just show you some of the data. So the mean PTSD scores was around 48.42. And as I said earlier, a 50 was about the cutoff that we used. So they were averaging, you know, a positive diagnosis for PTSD. And if you look at the 41 to 45 and 36 to 40, there's still a substantial amount. So cutoffs are relatively arbitrary. I mean, you need to have a cutoff somewhere, but these participants are still experiencing some trauma and certainly some stress. So what were the gender differences in terms of the PTSD scores? Well, as you can see, again, with men being in blue and women being in pink, the females had, you know, there was a higher frequency of females in the higher ranges for PTSD. So as you can see, sort of the pink is outnumbering the blue in the higher score. So it's clear that women are experiencing the PTSD at higher levels, which is, you know, is backed up by previous research. Now, one of the major things to be looked at in this study was alcohol use, and it's important to think about, as I showed you earlier, these are heavy drinkers, so how is alcohol use affecting their PTSD? It's interesting to note that this was post-intervention and as well as post-earthquake, that their drinking levels declined in both groups. So there could be a lot of reasons for that. It could be the intervention. It could be things associated with the earthquake and that all the bars, you know, were crushed, so they didn't really have an opportunity to drink. But there are a lot of different reasons for why it might have happened. So what were the specific gender differences? So women reported significantly higher levels of repeated disturbing dreams of the earthquake, having physical reactions when something reminded you of the earthquake, feeling distant or cut off from other people, feeling as if your future will somehow be cut short, feeling jumpy or startled easily. Now, the DSM-4 sort of defines PTSD as there has to be a traumatic trigger like an earthquake where there's actual or threatened death, and then you have sort of the hyperarousal components. You think about people who are coming back from the military who are startled by a car backfiring because they're on hyperarousal, their cortisol levels are up. There's that sort of re-remembering those cognitive thoughts that you can't help but have your mind racing and have these cognitive thoughts constantly going through, as well as this avoidant of any stimuli related that can be even somehow related to the event. So what were the differences? Again, 59.3% of the females reported scores above the threshold for diagnosis, whereas 38.6% of males reported scores. So significant, huge difference when comparing the females to the males. Now, another interesting thing was we looked at male hazardous drinkers compared to non-hazardous drinkers, and then we looked at female hazardous drinkers compared to non-hazardous drinkers. Now, among the males, their drinking didn't really affect their PTSD, but among the females, there was a clear difference among the hazardous drinkers in repeated disturbing memories, thoughts or images of the earthquake, trouble falling or staying asleep, being super alert or watchful on guard. Again, you've got the hyperarousal, the issues with re-remembering. So it's clear that the drinking is having some effect on their PTSD. So these were just sort of some other analyses that were linked with that were baseline variables that were associated with the PTSD. There was age, gender, problems with alcohol, behavioral disengagement, venting of emotions. There's a number of things that could explain sort of why they're experiencing PTSD, and I'll sort of get into that in the conclusions. So there were two post-earthquake variables associated with PTSD. Reported loss of belongings, change of employment status was important. Younger age was a significant predictor, problems with alcohol, as sort of I've been discussing, and use of behavioral disengagement. So conclusions, basically younger participants who reported problems with alcohol and those who used behavioral disengagement were 3 and 1.5 times as likely to suffer from PTSD. Older participants were less likely to suffer, and obviously the major difference that I've been focusing on is that the women had higher rates of PTSD than the men. Despite males being heavier drinkers overall, female hazardous drinkers had much higher rates of PTSD and a much more complex etiology. Now, I had recently looked at a report by Amnesty International, and there's a huge numbers of reported cases of sexual assault, retrospectively back, a year later after the earthquake occurred. So it might have been that they were sort of experiencing different traumas that were related to the earthquake. So it's not quite clear which trauma is resulting in these symptoms. And so sort of future implications, focused interventions should target HIV-positive women, younger patients, those who abuse alcohol, and those who tend to disengage as a coping mechanism. So now, it's sort of, there are lots of different reasons or sort of explanations that you can think about for why this were to occur. And, I mean, it could be that, sort of people who are, or women particularly, who are high-risk individuals tend to drink more and also are more susceptible to PTSD. It could be that the drinking itself created some sort of higher, more susceptibility to experiencing PTSD, or it could be, you know, something completely different. So there's a lot of sort of possible explanations for this, which is why we should do some future analyses to sort of look at some of these possible theories. So that's it. Thank you.